I have a very dramatic announcement. So anyone with a weak heart should leave now.
Unreal. Revolution. Uncensored. Revolution. Unfiltered. Revolution. Unchanged. Revolution. Unadulterated. Revolution. Unbelievable. CliffCentral.com. Revolution.
What a joy it is on this wonderful sunny afternoon here in Johannesburg, South Africa, for me, Professor David Block, to be looking up with you. We will be looking up in awe, in wonder, in grandeur, and in splendor at the cosmos above, the macrocosm, and of course the microcosm below. So every week we've been having fabulous guests, fabulous podcast downloads, and I just want to thank you again so much for your support and the incredible questions which we receive and which I have the joy and privilege of answering, and those answers get streamed globally across our pale blue dot, the Earth. I've often wondered, sitting behind this microphone, you know, I've often saluted the pioneering mindset of Gareth Cliff and of Rena Bloomberg and the entire crew, and I've often wondered, what is the actual future of digital audio broadcasting, DAB? One recognizes it as the next step in you know, walking into a New York subway and listening to, you know, programs like this just on your mobile. And so I came across a most fascinating article, and the headlines scream forth as follows, and I quote, "In 2017, Norway will be the first country to shut down FM radio." And this, of course, is exactly what here is being done here at CliffCentral.com. It says the Norwegian Minister of Culture finalized a date this week, making Norway the first country to plan the transition to digital audio broadcasting as a national standard. So here we are. I'm part of the crew at CliffCentral.com, and we, in fact, spearheading, Duncan, this incredible move to DAB, to the digital audio broadcasting framework. Now, today, I wish to delve on a most interesting man, on his thoughts, and how his thoughts are applicable to your life and my life. And I'm talking of someone who literally wrote perhaps what one might call the Bible on investing and on speculation, Dixon Watts. It is extremely interesting to look up what Dixon Watts actually wrote, and I'll be sharing my thoughts with you. Remember that you can reach me, Professor David Block, in studio. I'll be giving you the contact numbers in a moment. You can reach me on Facebook at CliffCentral.com. You can reach me on Twitter. You can reach me live on air. I believe the number is, Duncan's writing it down furiously, I know it's a 0861. And then, Duncan, it's a 555, and then it is a 189. So to reach me, Professor David Block, live in this digital feed, 0861-555-189. WeChat ID is CliffCentral.com, and all the other addresses as well on Twitter and so forth, CliffCentral.com. I'd love you to reach me in studio. I would love you to reach me on WeChat, whichever medium you are most comfortable with. Now, in doing research for today's program, I looked at the foreword of a book called Speculation as a Fine Art by a gentleman called Dixon Watts. And so I was terribly interested to know who Dixon Watts really was. And he turns out to be one of the greatest of investors and speculators in the late 1800s. In the foreword to his book, one reads the following. You have opened, and I quote, the tomb of a great man. His name and his exchange have almost vanished. Dixon Watts, author of Speculation as a Fine Art and Thoughts on Life, was president of the New York Cotton Exchange, quote unquote. So here we have a man who was right at the top of his field in the area and in the domain of speculation. He was president, Dixon Watts was, of the New York Cotton Exchange between the years 1878 and 1880. That exchange was one of the greatest arenas of speculation in the United States. Seats sold then for as much as $45,000. Now that in 1880 or 1878 is an extraordinary accomplishment. So in this stream today, Pandora's box is literally open. You have some of his thoughts in your hands, and I wanted to share some of these thoughts with you because they really encouraged me so much this week to look up. Let's just start with a few. For example, Dixon Watts wrote the following. Catch thoughts on the fly, for there is no rebound. I repeat, catch thoughts on the fly, for there is no rebound. Often we dream. Often we dream of new vistas, new theaters of our operations, new ways, new innovative ways, new inspirational ways of moving the cutting edge to the vistas of tomorrow. But what's very interesting is that Watts has it spot on when he says, catch thoughts on the fly, for there is no rebound. In other words, trust your intuition. And that is exactly what I observed, Duncan, when I worked with Professor Kenneth Freeman at the Australian National University, is that with him that he trusts his gut feel. So how does that apply, for example, to me as the author of books? Well, I suddenly have an idea. It just suddenly happens, perhaps just even sitting here. I have an idea, say, for a new chapter in one of my new books. So what do I do with that new idea? Do I discard it or do I develop? Do I embroider on that theme? I suppose over the years, I've trained my mind to catch the thoughts. Now, remember, when you go out fishing, one might, for example, have many fish in the lake or sea or ocean, wherever one happens to be. But, you know, the point is you don't, many people do not catch many fish. There are master fishermen who do catch many fish, but Dixon Watts gets it right. Dixon Watts says that we have to catch them. We have to take our thoughts and catch them. And I want to repeat it because I'm just so excited about this. Catch thoughts on the fly, for there is no rebound. In other words, once you think of a new innovative way or a new innovative app of doing something that has not been done before, then take those thoughts, grab a pen, and write them down, because by doing that, you actually catch those thoughts. And I often do that with my life, with my career, with my researches. I might wake up in the middle of the night. Often just before going to bed, I have a whole set of new ideas, possibly even this one, to share the thoughts of Dixon Watts with you, president of the New York Cotton Exchange. And so I would immediately just write down, you know, Watts, share thoughts on Cliff Central. And that's a thought. And it comes from you know, seemingly just out of the blue. But the awesomeness is that, you know, you then start sharing these thoughts. And I'm just so excited because they really just help me to look up. And so, yes, one's intuition is so important. And I've asked Professor Kenneth Freeman, the father of dark matter in our universe, you know, what led you to the concept of dark matter? Ken, what was it? And I suppose that at the end of the day, he would reply that it was his intuition. He had an intuitive feel somehow that something would happen if he traversed the less traveled road. And that's the secret of my life and of my research, is that one doesn't let thoughts evaporate, but one catches them. One catches them on the fly, meaning just as is. And once you've caught them, then there's no rebound, because that's exactly, I believe, the secret of people like Steve Jobs and many others, is that they learned, they trained themselves to catch thoughts. And here we have one of the greatest speculators from the New York Cotton Exchange. And he himself pens the words, two words, catch thoughts. In other words, don't discard thoughts, but catch them. So the lines are buzzing, and I'm very pleased to see here Darren Jacobson is with us on WeChat, I believe, Duncan. And Duncan affirms this, and Darren says, glad to be back on schedule listening to you, Prof. David Block, live on Cliff Central. Nothing wrong with catching up on the podcast, sir. Well, Darren, it is awesome. It is awesome to be back and to be back with my precious jewels, my listeners. You are quite correct in saying that there's nothing wrong on catching up with podcasts, because as I have just shared, that is now the future of radio, is that we look at a country like Norway. Now, remember, Norway is really a beautiful example of a first world country. I had the unique privilege, Darren, of taking a group to observe the Aurora Borealis from Norway, and we were at a latitude in northern Norway of 70 degrees. So we were a mere 20 degrees away from the North Pole. But what amazed me, Darren, is that in Norway, everything works. For example, they start clearing the roads to schools at 3 a.m. Duncan, do you believe that would ever happen in South Africa, that at 3 a.m. in the morning we'd see people starting clear the roads?
Not in this day and age, Professor.
Indeed, not in this day and not in this age. But in Norway, somehow they know that unless the streets are cleared and, you know, you want to go to work and you want to go to school, unless that happens, you won't go there. You won't reach a destination. So Norway is a country that really works. It's really, you know, right at the upper echelons. The level of unemployment is just so, so low. But my central point, Darren, is that if Norway is going the DAB route of the digital audio broadcasting route, then we should take heed, because Norway just, you know, I have just got such respect for the way that country is actually run in terms of municipal delivery. It is awesome to see those snow plows working. I was in a little town called Tromsø in northern Norway. We might have some listeners listening to me now from Tromsø. And it is just so amazing to see things working so well. And yet they are deciding that the digital streaming route is the way to go. Because you think of someone sitting in their car, for example. Well, they won't turn on their radio in due course. They'll just put a little earpiece in their ear and listen on their mobile. But you can do that on the train. You can do it on the street. You can do it wherever you are. And I think that's an incredible thing about DAB or digital audio broadcasting or streaming. So it is indeed, podcasts are indeed an awesome way to catch up on programs which one may have missed. And again, that's catching a thought. I think just as Watts says, catch thoughts on the fly. What you're saying, Darren, it's another way of catching a thought. But then there's some beautiful, beautiful other thoughts, and I just have underlined a few. Watts also said, as a speculator, all see, few observe, fewer still compare. And you know, I happen to be part of a team who discovered the collision of two galaxies, relatively nearby, the Andromeda Spiral Galaxy. And I was part of an international team of investigators and researchers who actually, discovered this collision. And so people at Harvard, I remember one scientist at Harvard said, you know, at Harvard University, we have 300 astronomers approximately working. And yet here you are in South Africa and, you know, you and your team did it. And the results were featured in Nature, which is the world's most prestigious scientific journal. Now, he, I suppose, you know, hit the nail on the head, this professor from Harvard, because he said, all of us see, but very few of us actually observe. And I suppose I am trained. It's just like, for example, a neurologist or a neurosurgeon. You put two neurosurgeons together, show them the same x-rays, the same MRI scans, and the one sees this and the other sees something totally unique and different. And I suppose that's my training in morphology, is to observe rather than see. I look at things and I see, but then my eye homes in, central focus, and I try and observe. I try and understand. I try and probe and scratch beneath the cosmic horizons, not only to see, but also to observe. And I suppose, Darren, that when Watts said, all see but few observe, fewer still compare, that does share the awesomeness and the difference of seeing, and then, of course, the difference between seeing and observing. Then Watts said something very interesting. He says, common sense is sense men have in common. Now, you must remember that by men he meant mankind, men and women. Common sense is sense men have in common. So, just to give you an example, George Bezos and I, our esteemed guest last week, Duncan, we were at a restaurant. And at this restaurant, they were selling bottles of wine, which cost in range up to 30,000 rand. So, I mean, what would you think, Duncan, of buying a bottle of wine for 30,000 rand?
Professor, I'd firstly think about my starving family members in Soweto, so yes. I wouldn't go that far.
Yes, exactly. So he walked away in his quiet manner, Duncan, and he said, such people have a great amount of money, but zero common sense. Mm. Because one wheezes everything out the next day anyway. So I think this is true, that one wheezes everything out the next day anyway, whether it's a 100 rand bottle of wine or 30,000 rand bottle of wine. And so I guess that in his own way, Bezos was saying that all see but fewer observe. And I think it's very, very important to observe in one's life with common sense. I love the idea that each one of us is endowed with common sense. And that's something which Watts, placed such a striking swath of the pen. In this interview, in this little chat we're having on speculation as a fine art, we have Neville Roberts on the line all the way from Obi. Neville, it's awesome to have you on our show today.
Nice to hear you, David. Can I ask a question on astronomy?
Yeah, you may ask whatever question you want to ask, even a 30,000 bottle of wine.
Yeah, I'm not in favor of that. And the subject of coronal mass ejections.
Yes.
If we were to have one of the order of the Carrington event of 1859, I think it was.
Yes.
And it was a direct hit. What would be the impact on our interconnected digital world today?
Yes, that's a very interesting question. Now, just to set the framework for our listeners, our sun is our closest star. The temperature at the center of the sun is 16 million degrees centigrade, which means that you can bake, fry, and boil simultaneously. And the surface temperature is 6,000 degrees centigrade. And the sun continuously sheds vast bubbles of gas. Their mass can be a million to 2 million kilograms or more. So you've got this bubble which of gas, hot gas, which the sun ejects, and that bubble is called a CME, or a coronal mass ejection. These bubbles start traveling between, I would estimate, at the lower end, 20 kilometers a second, at the upper end, perhaps 3,200 kilometers per second, with an average of about 489 kilometers per second. And these particles from the sun in these bubbles start traveling towards the Earth's magnetic shield, the magnetosphere. Now, these bubbles, Neville, can reach us in a time of 13 hours. The average time is 3.5 days for coronal mass ejection to hit the Earth. Now, when they do strike the magnetosphere, they can cause radio blackouts. And we have experienced that many times in the past where the broadcast media actually halt. You can have huge power surges, and you can have a halt in broadcast. Remember, you've got this bubble of mass, nearly 2 million kilograms, coming your way and hitting the Earth. They are, in the dates you mentioned, very close in number to the solar maximum. The sun goes through a cycle of activity and then inactivity every some 11 years. And so when the sun is particularly active, these high-energy particles, such as xenon and krypton, strike the Earth's magnetic fields generally around the poles, Neville. So you have the aurora borealis, and you have the aurora australis. What is happening is that these high-energy particles interact with with atoms in our atmosphere. They ionize the atoms. And in the spectra of the aurora, which I was privileged to see from Norway last year, you see the most beautiful greens and reds and so forth, specifically elements and atoms being ionized of oxygen and of nitrogen. But yes, they can have rather devastating effects on broadcasting, blackouts, which might last for several minutes and more, huge power surges. And I think what it goes to show, Neville, is just how active our closest star really, really is that it's shedding mass in the form of CMEs or coronal mass ejections all the time. Now, what were your thoughts this week, Neville, of the coronal mass ejection about to strike the Earth?
Well, I understand it from your comments. It was not a major event this time.
Yes.
So I wasn't really anticipating much.
That's correct.
To be aware of it down here.
That's correct. In other words, what I would say is for this one, it's a weak CME, a weak coronal mass ejection. Certainly its mass would not be extreme. You would not have a high level of activity. But I just think it just goes to show how dynamic the universe really is, the universe in which we live, move, and have our beings. It is awesome to think that as you and I are talking, Neville, there's a CME, a coronal mass ejection, traveling towards us, scheduled to hit on April 21, 22. But as we pointed out on Facebook, it is not an extreme one. And so as far as, global streaming is concerned, there'll be no effects whatsoever. But it is extremely important to realize that when there's massive CMEs, and massive sunspot activity, broadcasting in general can be halted. Thank you so much, and enjoy your awesome day in Obi. I can just see you standing there overlooking the glory of your little private valley with the trees waving gently in the wind.
Exactly.
Be blessed, and to you and Margaret, always look up.
Thanks.
That was Neville Roberts asking me about coronal mass ejections. So let's have a look at the lines again. WeChat ID, remember. Oh, we have something from Inappropriate. I just love your code name there, Inappropriate, because your comments are always so appropriate. So to see you, to see the wording come up inappropriate, I just think is so appropriate that it's inappropriate not to be appropriate. So, in fact, it's so appropriate that even people who study being appropriate would say that inappropriate is not appropriate. So, Professor, the fact that we know more about outer space than we know about the deepest parts of our ocean is frightening to me. Wow, that's interesting. Well, I wouldn't be frightened at all, inappropriate. I would say it's inappropriate to be frightened, and I'll tell you why. As a scientist, I am on a voyage of discovery. As a scientist, I love to discover. So I'm not gifted to dive, for example, Duncan. You know, I expand like the universe does. And if I were to dive, I would just dive into the water and not reappear again. So, the point is that each one of us have talents, have unique talents, have unique capabilities. And, you know, perhaps one of my strong points, you know, is to discover. That's just something God has gifted me with, is, you know, to move forward, to discover new things in our cosmos. Now, of course, there are multitudes of teams doing research under the oceans. And I remember even at the Great Barrier Reef, there were huge numbers of scientists busy studying the life beneath our oceans. And it's true. You know, I would say there's so much still to discover beneath the oceans. And there's still so much to discover in our night skies or in our skies. One thinks of the cosmic microwave background radiation. Again, there's just so much to do in that arena. And so I've always seen a juxtaposition between the big and the small, with myself almost in the middle. And that leads me on, inappropriate, to another very interesting quote by Dixon Watts. And I want to share this, and then I want Duncan to comment on it, and then I'll elaborate. He says here, don't look at your friends through a microscope. In other words, don't find faults with them all the time. Don't look at your friends through a microscope, nor look at yourself through a telescope as if you're minuscule. How does that grab you, Duncan?
You might want to repeat that, Professor. You lost me.
Okay. I'm not being fair to Duncan because I'm throwing some very deep philosophical thoughts. Right. So let me just explain. Don't look at your friends through a microscope, nor at yourself through a telescope. So let me just unpack this for inappropriate and for Duncan. So don't look at your friends through a microscope. What that means is don't be petty and start finding faults with all your friends. You see, when we look at, specimens through a microscope, we're looking microscopically at the minutest little detail. And so many of us speak of people minutely analyzing even their body language, minutely analyzing, you know, their every move. Is he doing this? You know, is he doing that? What am I doing? How am I sitting? Are my arms folded? Are my arms unfolded? You know, what is his tone of voice? What is the ambiance in the room and so forth? And we generally speak that way about several of our friends, is that the moment one of us makes an error, then suddenly, you know, onto Facebook it might be or wherever it goes, and people do tend to look at one another at their faults rather than their strengths. I remember a student who I will codename Yvonne, and she came to me at Wits one day, not her real name, of course, and she said to me, and let's call her codename Yvonne, she said to me, Prof, I just hate applied maths. So I said to her, that's your problem. Imagine if Tiger Woods got up every morning and said, I just hate golf. I hate it with a passion. I cannot stand golf. What sort of marks, in quotes, would Tiger Woods score? Would he be one of the great golfers? Well, of course he wouldn't, because he was hating it. And so I worked with Yvonne, codenamed Yvonne, for a couple of months. And I'm very proud to say that I saw her marks rise from 33% in applied mathematics to about 75%, Duncan, which was a distinction level. So I have seen changes in attitudes when I feed on people's zones of when I press their green buttons rather than their red buttons. In other words, I don't like looking at people through a microscope. You know, I meet many, many, I'm privileged to meet multitudes of people across the globe. But I'd never try and look at my friends through a microscope, looking at, you know, for example, I remember once picking up a scientist at the airport and he stank. He hadn't had a bath in months. But Duncan, I have to look beyond that. How would you feel, Duncan, if you, you know, picked up a famous scientist and they stank? What would be your impression? Would you concentrate on that or rather concentrate on their mindset? It's hard, is it not?
It is very hard, Professor, especially at first, at face value. Exactly. You think that this person, but exactly. You would have to delve deeper into them and know the whole situation.
Yes.
To why they came to that point in their life where yes. They didn't take a bath for that
exactly.
Long.
I think that's just beautifully put, is that what Duncan is saying is that there's a story behind the story. There's a story behind the stink. You have to understand why has a person allowed himself to become so negative that they don't care, that they reek from the moment they step off the plane to Wits. You have to look at the story behind stories. Whenever I see someone acting negatively, I always ask myself, let's not look at that person through a microscope, as Dixon Watt says. But he also says, don't look at yourself through a telescope. Now, what happens? If you look at yourself through a telescope, you become a little dot. You become a little dot in the sky like a star. You just become tiny, like through a telescope. You look, you know, through a telescope, a distant lion, for example, if you're using the telescope terrestrially, might appear terribly small on the horizon. So through a telescope, we might seem very small, whereas through a microscope, of course, we're just so big, you can't even look at our thumb through a microscope. So Watts has it very realistically, and I just think this guy, who was one of the great investors, just made such interesting comments, not to look at ourselves through telescopes. In other words, don't underestimate your potential. I say it again, do not underestimate your potential. And a third time, following the tradition of Churchill, do not, never, never, never give up. Don't look at yourself through a telescope, but neither look at your friends through a microscope. In other words, be balanced. This comes to the whole area of encouragement, and then we'll have a little music break, is the following. Dixon Watts also said, and I quote, in the presence of some people, we wither like sensitive plants. In the presence of others, we expand like flowers. Quote, unquote. I just think that's awesome. You see, here you've got one of the, you know, giants in the investment speculation arena. But what I'm doing today is I'm marrying some of his thoughts with myself and with yourself. I'm taking some of the thoughts which obviously led him to be such an successful entrepreneur into your mind and my mind. And most of you, I am sure, have not heard of Dixon Watts. But I just find his book absolutely enthralling. In the presence of some people, we wither like sensitive plants, says Watts. In the presence of others, we expand like flowers. Well, let me give you an example of the expansion like flowers. Well, there are many examples I can give. But perhaps one day when I expanded like a flower was, I was driving to Wits University when the telephone rang, the mobile phone. And it was the office of President Mandela on the line. He was then president. And he had offered to name our twin boys. And the phone rang, and they said, this is the office of the president, and that President Mandela was ready to name our twin boys, which he did. He gave them beautiful names, Duncan, and Nkwenkwezi, which means star, and Ketile, which means the chosen one. But you see, I could not spell Nkwenkwezi. You know, when it came online, you know, when the word came online, Nkwenkwezi, I thought, well, you know, I can't embarrass the office of the president, but, you know, I do not know how to spell it, Nkwenkwezi. So I remember pulling my car off. I said, please hold on a second. Please. And I grabbed everywhere for a pen. And like a professor, I wasn't carrying one, and it made the search even harder. But I remember scrambling for a pen, and then found some paper. It might have even been a check that I had used. I can't remember what I found anymore, but there was Nelson Mandela naming our twin boys, and so it was spelt word for letter N K W and so forth, Nkwenkwezi and Ketile. And I suppose that sort of promise by Nelson Mandela that he would name our twin boys, who are now 16, expanded me like a flower. It somehow meant so much to me that the president of a country, one of the most famous leaders of all time, took time to name David Block's children. I think, you know, in retrospect, that really helped me flower. And it's always lived with me that he took the time. And not only did he take the time, but I remember visiting him at his home, and he actually signed their birth certificates. I've never seen Home Affairs jump into action so fast ever in my life. You know, normally to get birth certificates takes weeks. With Nelson Mandela, it took a day or so, you know, or less. I don't know. Once they asked, they said, Professor Block, Nkwenkwezi Block? But you a white guy. And then the twin, Ketile Block. Come on, Prof, something's wrong here. So we said, well, these are the names chosen by President Nelson Mandela. Well, I've never seen anybody in my life work at such relativistic speed. I think even Einstein, the father of relativity, would have been breathless at the speed at which they worked. But the point that I'm trying to make is that a little gesture like that was something which caused us to expand like flowers. And I must say that, you know, over the years, I'm privileged to address thousands and ten thousands of people, sometimes per sitting, but some people do make me flower. Just like being here at Cliff Central, just the entire crew helped me to flower. They really, really do. Another awesome time which helped me flower so much was when Gareth Cliff once emailed me, and he said, Prof, let's have some coffee together. And I said, sure. And then he invited me to have my own show. And I think that, you know, that just meant so much to me, is that here Gareth really wanted me with him as part of this crew. And that just meant the world to me, receiving that email. Again, helping me expand like a flower. Watts gets it right. He says, we expand like flowers. In other words, we increase in influence, we increase in our joy, we increase in our stride. We think of the Olympic race, we increase, we strive forward, we increase our leap, we increase our stretch. Watts has it right. We expand like flowers. You're listening to Professor David Block. We're looking up on CliffCentral.com. A little music break, and I look so forward to being back with you.
Unreal. Uncensored. Unradio.
CliffCentral.com.
Well, a hearty welcome, Professor David Block, and we are looking up together. The lines are busy, the WeChats are busy. We have a comment from, or a question from Inappropriate, who is asking the most appropriate of questions. So, Inappropriate says, Prof, sometimes I struggle for extra strength to move on and to look up. Prof, who can I look to if I'm, or am I looking for Jesus, or I'm looking for Jesus? Yes, I believe that in reaching every dream, there is a tremendous calling to be focused. I think you heard that on Advocate George Bischoff's discussion last week, is that he at 87 needs extra strength. But what gives him the extra strength is to keep the goal in focus. Think of an Olympic swimmer. They have a goal to win the Olympics, Inappropriate, and at times they need extra strength. And you know, there are many days, Inappropriate, when I would wake up and perhaps not feel like lecturing right then and there, needing some little extra strength. But the wonderful thing is that if one is focused, as you say you are, or if you are not focused, in reading your comment again, you know, to whom do I look up to get that extra strength to move on? I think that looking to Jesus is an awesome way of moving ahead, don't you, Duncan? Is that it's really setting one's lifestyle in focus on the Creator of the cosmos. I think that's a very awesome anchor to have in one's life.
Yes.
Good. So there I would heartily agree is that, you know, I've always kept the Lord as my absolute anchor. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. And then, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. And so Inappropriate, I just sense that's a heart cry. One sometimes feels like as if one's sinking, as if the boat is being rocked and so forth. But do remember the incredible words of Dixon Watts, as the to the fact that do associate with the right people. I really encourage you to do that. You know, Dixon Watts is very hard on that central point, is that, you know, some people make you wither and other people make you flower, expand like a flower. And, you know, if in any minute way I'm helping you today to expand like a flower, that makes my whole journey to Cliff Central Com Studios just so worthwhile. Is, you know, I often say just when I get out of the car, even if I can inspire one person today to run the Olympic race with new vigor and renewed strength, I've most certainly achieved my goal and much more. So, Inappropriate, if there's if that does or does not answer your question, just reach me by WeChat and we'll take that further. Another question, what would finding life on another planet mean? In other words, that's speculation again. What would life on another planet mean for yourself and myself? And Watts was very key, very crucial on this point too, Dixon Watts. He said, don't make the develop theories which fit the facts. Don't put theories ahead of facts. And I think that in the realm of the discovery of life in our universe, there's a great degree of speculation. And so this is why I'm so excited to bring in the thoughts of Dixon Watts, because he was one of the greatest speculators of his time, president of the New York Cotton Exchange. Imagine a seat at that stage in 1878 selling for $45,000. I mean, that is just worth an untold amount of money today. And, you know, he just said that we need to really keep the facts and the theories separate, insofar as give the facts central stage and let the theories follow the facts, not the facts follow the theories. And I think that's very true in just so many domains which I study, is that, you know, one can't discard theories, or sorry, one one must discard theories or modify them if they do not meet with the facts. One simply must, because I think that was one of the great strengths of Einstein's theory of general relativity, is that Einstein predicted that light from distant stars would be deflected around the sun, and this was tested by Sir Arthur Eddington in the early 1900s, and he verified that Einstein's prediction was true. So in other words, you've got theories, you've got facts, and then you've got to juxtapose a balance between theories and between facts. And so, you know, there's a lot of speculation, as there was in the early 1900s, that there'd be, for example, human beings on Mars. But as we know, there are no human beings on Mars whatsoever. So that was speculation. And when one speculates, and if you put theories that there's life on Mars before facts, you can become unstuck. And that's exactly what Dixon Watts cautions against, is he says, do not place the theories ahead of the facts. He says here, and Duncan, I'm showing you this just to show that I'm actually speaking the truth here, make your theories fit your facts. Make your theories fit your facts, not your facts, your theories. And so, you know, insofar as life on other worlds is concerned, there are just multitudes, a plethora of theories. But we have to be very, very careful about it, not go overboard and say, well, you know, this is now fact that there's another Gareth Cliff on Neptune, or an Alpha Centauri or Proxima Centauri, or there's another Jonathan, or there's another Rena, and so forth. One has to be very, very, very careful to distinguish and delineate fact from theory. And again, that just, I was just so thrilled when I read that comment by Dixon Watts. Make your theories fit your facts, not your facts, your theories. And so that's exactly what finding life on another planet would mean. Could it mean that it unites us as humanity? I think it would unite us just in the common quest of seeking the awesome grandeur, the story behind the story, the story behind the Big Bang, the story of how we came to be here. Just to whet your appetites before I continue on the thoughts of Dixon Watts, next week's a very special week on Looking Up with David Block, because this is an awesome book I bought. Well, just to take the story one step back, I was invited by George Bezos to his birthday party, and they had an image of George Bezos, which was on auction. And then I started learning about the 21 Icons Project, which includes George Bezos, includes Ahmed Kathrada, includes, of course, the late President Nelson Mandela, and, 21 Icons in all. And the genius behind the 21 Icons Project is, one of our leading photographers, absolutely so, Adrian Stern. And I look very forward to interacting with Adrian Stern before the program, just to roadmap our questions, and then bringing him in on the Cliff Central Com studio for 1 hour live. So that is Adrian Stern, the photographer, the legend behind the legend, the man who photographed all these icons, who captures emotion in just such a beautiful way. And I would encourage you greatly to listen to what he has to say, to questions he will ask me, I will ask him, and so forth, in our interaction next week with Adrian Stern. Jerome is on the line, or rather on WeChat. And Jerome says, may God bless you forever, Prof. Wow. I just want to cry. May God bless you forever, Prof, because he made you an instrument to inspire us. You light our candle each week. Duncan, write that down for me. I want to make a big poster of that and put that in my office. So let's just write that. I'll write that down afterwards. But well, I suppose I have faced many, many Goliaths in my life, Jerome, many Goliaths. And I'll be sharing some of the Goliaths I have faced in the weeks to come. And so, whenever I face a Goliath, I always remember the scripture that David cut off Goliath's head. And it's interesting because my name is David. And so, Duncan, how do you like that, the David and Goliath scenario?
It fits very well, Professor.
And so, you know, the reason that I'm alive is to inspire others. I think that's just so important. And I think you've captured it beautifully because you've said that you light our candle each week. I mean, that just sends me into orbit. It really does. That, you know, if I can, in the minutest of ways, and I just say this with the utterest degree of humility, if I can, in the minutest of ways, know that I have lit Jerome's candle. What is a candle? The candle gives light, but the candle gives, most importantly, hope. I remember when Nelson Mandela was alive, the central focus he placed on the lighting of candles, light overcoming darkness. And, well, that's why I'm here, Jerome, and I'm just so excited that I'm just God's little instrument to inspire and encourage you and to light, help or help light your candles each and every week. So we've been looking at speculation, at the realms of speculation, at the powers of imagination, and I'd like to end off with one or two further thoughts by this great man, Dixon Watts. He says, if speculation keeps you awake at night, sell down to the sleeping point. I love that. If speculation about anything keeps you awake at night, sell down. In other words, get rid of those worries. That's really what he's saying. And to us, I suppose, in this extreme realm of xenophobic violence and so forth, if speculation keeps you awake at night, you are worrying too much. I would encourage you to be part of the solution rather than be part of the problem. My wife yesterday was part of a march at the University of Johannesburg against xenophobic attacks. I adore and appreciate every single human being. I recognize each human being as a flower born to yet spread its petals further. I see the mass of humanity not as a mass of humanity, but rather as individuals. In conclusion, yesterday I was with one of South Africa's greatest cartoonists of all time, Dov Fedler. And he came to the car to bid me farewell. And Dov Fedler said something to me which was quite remarkable. He said, just look at what's at my foot. And I had a look, and there was a little dandelion, a little plant, a dandelion. And he said to me, well, just look at those beautiful aerodynamically designed parachutes. And of course, we know that when the wind blows, the dandelion sheds its parachutes to sprout forth new dandelions. I see you as one of those awesome parachutes. I see you seeding new ideas, new creativity, new potential. I see those parachutes being carried, your parachutes being carried in the winds of space and of time. I see them landing on fertile ground. I see them sprouting forth. I see awesome new dandelions. I see new creativity and power and purpose and majesty and awe and wonder. Words fail me at 14:58:59 South African Standard Time. Until next time, this is Professor David Block looking up, trusting you've enjoyed the worlds of speculation as delineated by the great speculator Dixon Watts. And now some concluding music.
CliffCentral.com